Welcome to another episode of The Flash of Two Mics. I'm your host, Adam, and with me is my co-host, Donnie. Donnie, how are you?
Hey, what's up, Flash fans? It's the man that starts every day by having coffee on the cosmic treadmill. It's the Emerald Enthusiast.
How do you pull that off? Drinking coffee and running at that speed.
I would like to see that too.
Yeah, I think that would be... That's something for either the Flash TV series or the upcoming movie. To tackle, you know, I mean, and since we're going to have two Batman in The Flash, maybe if there's one Alfred there, he can bring Barry a coffee while he's on the cosmic treadmill. But, you know,
speaking of Alfred and coffee, did you ever get your coffee last night?
Well, no, well, Steven is you know, he's more of a tea man. So, I'm trying to get him, you know, comfortable with making the proper espresso, but you know,
I never got my muffin either.
Yeah, well, he was pretty disgruntled over that muffin comment. So, you know, now I gotta give him a raise just to compensate for his feelings. It's a whole, you've caused a lot of turmoil there, I gotta tell you. We have a fun role play thing going on Twitter. If you wanna watch it play out, you can over there. But we'll do social media plugs at the end.
Yeah, when a ball of Axian's hungry, he's hungry. He doesn't care about your feelings.
That's right. Yeah, that's the kilowatt way. But fun and games aside, we do have some news, and some of it is not good. Others is interesting, very interesting. So, Donnie, why don't you kick us off with the... Let's rip the Band-Aid off and do the bad news, and then we'll do the good news.
Well, we had another round of layoffs at DC Comics. There's a corporate restructuring going on, and it's unfortunate that it had to happen in the midst of this pandemic because it's created a lot of trepidation out there. And we just want to say to everyone who may have been laid off at DC Comics, we are... very appreciative of all your efforts. From what we're hearing, reading, it's about a third of the staff that was left from the previous layoff that happened a couple of months ago. So, you know, Adam and I, we, you know, our hearts pump comic book blood, and, you know, DC Comics, it's in our blood. And we just want to say to everyone there, we are with you. We certainly hope all of you land on your feet, and thank you very much. It's not all bad news. There is an upcoming event. And so Adam, give us a little bit of information on that.
Sure. Just to echo your sentiments. I think it is an unfortunate situation. And what we're gleaning is that it has nothing to do with sales figures or anything like that. This is purely, you know, restructuring and, you know, when, as we said the last time we discussed it, you know, when a new ownership takes over, this is the unfortunate part of business. And so we wish all those people that were affected well. And again, I have no doubt that, you know, they're talented individuals and they will land on their feet. And in the meantime, as supporters of these beautiful pieces of entertainment and art called comic books, I think as fans, what we can do is support the people that are currently employed. By supporting the comic books and the stories they tell by purchasing them. And whether that be, look, if you're a physical guy, purchase them physical. If you're a digital guy, purchase them digitally. Everything helps. And if you're a mix of both, that's cool too. But just, you know, support the local comic book industry and your comic shop and digitally, however you consume your comics, buy them.
Yes. And I do want to point out there's a lot of misinformation on the internet. You hear people saying, you know, this is because DC's not telling the stories that their fans want to read. That is not true. Yeah, this all has to do with corporate restructuring. It's not about comic book sales or, you know, any impact that DC is having on pop culture as a whole.
My other favorite misconception is AT&T doesn't care if DC succeeds. Sure they don't. Okay. I mean, it's part of their company. It drives a lot of their IP. I'm pretty sure they want it to succeed.
Yes, and a lot
common
of
common sense.
A lot of what is happening is they are moving a lot of comics digitally, And so we may not see, from the what I'm hearing, 10 or 12 titles possibly next year. They're going to pare everything down to that. So it may be a much smaller group of DC solicits that you will see from month to month or week to week.
10 or 12 physical titles or physical and digital?
That is, I have been seeing that number, 10 or 12 titles. So I'm assuming maybe that's both. Maybe it's 10 or 12 physical titles and then a couple digital titles in addition to that.
Yeah, because digital, again, I think, would be a lot easier to, I mean,
yeah,
there's in terms of manufacturing, there's not, yeah, I mean, you know what I mean? It's
right, and it's, yeah, and it's, but it's a lot of rumor out there right now, so yeah, there's things that can't be confirmed. We do know that they're paring down their releases, though.
Here's what I will state with now, again, I don't have exact information. Nobody from AT&T or DC is you know, feeding me this information, so it's just purely my thought process, so take it as such. But I'm willing to bet that, okay, these first two are a no-brainer. Batman will have books. Superman will have books. Wonder Woman will have a book. The Flash will have a book. Green Lantern will have a book. And the Justice League will have a book. I think those six, those were six, right? Those six are safe because those characters have a presence outside of, you know, in various other mediums, you know, either currently or going forward. So I think those books are pretty much a guarantee. You will have a book featuring those characters. I mean, would you say that's a fair guess or opinion to have, or am I just wishful thinking?
I would have to believe so, as well as a few newer characters. I would think they would, sure, want to capitalize, yeah, on some of them. I'm guessing, you know, Harley Quinn's not exactly new, but in the grand scheme of,
yeah,
things.
Yeah, she'll stay around, but I yeah, lump her in with the Bat family. So, I mean,
yeah, so I'm guessing a few things along those lines. And yeah, this may be a smaller output, but it doesn't mean that it's going to be any less impactful. So yeah, I unfortunately, like I said, I'm seeing a lot of misinformation, a lot of dissonance out there on the internet,
yeah,
and some, you know, people out there who are making fun of the fate of people at DC, which I find very distasteful. But you know, we're going to keep things positive here. We're not going to go into that. But
just yeah, one bit of speculation though, Donnie, just to get your opinion on something. What if, let's say each of the characters I mentioned gets one physical book, right?
Okay.
What if, for the sake of, you know, the Flash and Green Lantern, let's say Barry and Hal get the physical book, right?
Okay.
For their respective characters. But then, as a digital exclusive, we get maybe a Wally book and a Green Lantern core book. Would that be something that you'd be all for, or?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I would buy all of those.
Yeah, so that could be my thinking, because again, you know, the Flash has a family of characters, Green Lantern is a core, so I mean, you could capitalize on those aspects by going digital with you know, like keep the face of the current face of the franchises, the physical, and then the family of characters can have a digital presence, is how I would see that as the best of both worlds. Personally, but we'll see how it shakes out. But that's just an idea from my head. And if the people at AT&T and DC want to use it, by all means, do so. And you can then take my money for buying those books.
I would think as well, they would have to represent with HBO Max, with the Green Lantern series coming up, they would want to represent, you know, Guy and Simon, yeah, and Jessica and Alan. So
that's what yeah, I mean. Any characters that have a presence outside of you know, the comic book medium.
Right. Supergirl, right? Yeah.
Right. You know, like so the people on TV, let's say, or in movies, should get some sort of treatment via DC. Now, do I think somebody like Batwoman should have a digital title? Absolutely. Black Lightning, give him a digital title or a physical, like, but you know, and again, this is me saying this is a huge Batman fan. Black Lightning, I think, could support a digital, at the very least, a digital title without being part of Batman and the Outsiders. As much as I love that book, it's okay to give, you know, it's cool to give Black Lightning his own book. And I think, look, digital is probably the safer bet. Do it. And keeping it within the Flash and Green Lantern family, you know what has a presence on TV and will have a presence in a movie soon? The JSA. Earth to anybody over there at AT&T in DC that has the power to do so. Can I have one of those books?
Oh, I'm down with that too. Yes, they definitely need to capitalize on Stargirl's popularity.
Absolutely, absolutely. And like I said, the JSA is coming via Black Adam. Why don't I have a, again, I'll buy either physical or digital. I don't care. But I want, I'd like a JSA book.
I would definitely buy that. You put Alan Scott in the title and I instantly won it, as well as Jay Garrick.
Like I mean, Donnie, I don't know if you've been reading, but I'm sad. And I mean, I know, again, this happens, and maybe it was the natural progression end of the story. But the Hawkman book by Robert Venditti, you know, former Green Lantern writer, that was fantastic.
Oh, I've heard that, and when it is eventually collected, I definitely want to buy that. I'm just waiting for it to come out in, like, you know, trade paperback or hardcover.
I think we'll have to do a review on that. Yeah. Just because it has a Green Lantern connection via Robert Venditti, and it's our podcast. We can do whatever the hell we want.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But, you tell them.
Exactly. Well, who's going to tell me different? Go ahead. I've already blocked people this morning. I can do another round of people. It's not a problem. I'm like Jor-El, you know, with a block button. It's like the fortress, just block, and it's like throwing that you know, the album cover that becomes the Fortress Assaulted. The Phantom Zone. I'm getting my locales, my Superman locales mixed up.
Isolate this invasive presence.
Right, exactly. But while we're waiting for the Hawkman, you know, trades to be collected so you could read them, we do have other comic news, and it's happier news. So for the months of January and February, DC is doing a two-month line-wide event featuring an all-star lineup of writer and artists to introduce future DC superheroes and terrifying new supervillains. And it's basically going to give a potential future status quo for DC characters. So because I know this is Flash-centric, but because this will be the first podcast out where I get to talk about this and Donnie gets to talk about this, we're just going to run through the list of what we're getting, and then we'll key in on the Flash conversation. But so we're going to get a couple of oversized comics, which are going to be twice a month. So we're going to get, for Superman fans, there's Superman and Metropolis, number 1 and 2. And then it's a Future State Superman and Metropolis. And then Future State Superman Worlds of War, 1 to 4. That will feature, so Superman and Metropolis will feature John Kent, whereas Superman Worlds of War will feature Kal-El on Warworld. So I should give you some, what's that?
Which I find very interesting. Yes.
Yeah, the Warworld one has a lot of John Carter of Mars influence on, at least from the cover. I should probably give some creative teams, right?
Go ahead.
So Superman and Metropolis is by Sean Lewis and John Timms. And then because it's oversized, it has like a backup sort of secondary and third stories. So within Superman and Metropolis, we have The Guardian by Sean Lewis and Colley Hammer, and Mr. Miracle by Brandon Easton and Valentin Delandro. I think I pronounced that right. In Superman War of Worlds 1 to 4, we have Philip Kennedy Johnson and Mikkel Janin doing the main book. Then we have a Midnighter story from Becky Cloonan, Michael W. Conrad, and Gleb Melnikov. And then within another backup story is Black Racer by Jeremy Adams and Sia. I definitely botched that. Apologies. And then Mr. Miracle, another Mr. Miracle. I don't know if it's the same one or... No, it looks to be the same one by the same theme. Okay, never mind. All right, so then we also have an Immortal Wonder Woman 1 and 2. And that's going to be by Becky Cloonan again and Michael W. Conrad and then Jen Bartel. So some female presence on the Wonder Woman title, which is cool. And then
that's the one that includes Nubia, right?
Yes, the secondary story. I don't want to call it a backup because it's the other story. I'm not going to even call it a secondary story. The other story, because secondary, it makes it seem like lesser than. But
right.
Nubia by L.L. McKinney, Aletha E. Martinez, and Mark Morales.
So yeah, I'm interested in that one.
I'll definitely check it out. Okay, so then we have, going to the Justice League family, we have Future State Justice League 1 and 2. So we have Justice League, and in those are going to be Justice League by Joshua Williamson, who is doing great work on the current Flash, or did great work, excuse me, on the Flash, and artist Robson Rocha. And then the other story in that one is Justice League Dark by, I had to double check that to make sure I wasn't seeing things. Ram V and Marcio Takara. And then, from there we have another one of interest to me and Donnie, Future State Green Lantern, number 1 and 2. You think we'll be reading those, Donnie?
I'm not only going to get those, obviously I'm going to get the variant covers and things like
he's
that.
He's going to get 45 covers, even though there are only probably well, four.
I hope they don't put out 45 covers.
Donnie's going to manifest another 42 covers.
My kids still have to eat now, so let's show a little bit of control.
TV dinners are pretty good, last I heard. See, if they were my kids, would be like, you guys are eating too good lately. And then, besides, this is post-Thanksgiving and Christmas, so they'll be full.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
Store it like a bear. bears make it work. So for the Green Lanterns books, 1 and 2, we have a story called Last Lanterns, by Jeffrey Thorne and Tom Rainey, and then Tales of the Green Lantern Corps by Josie Campbell, Ryan Cady, and Ernie Altbacker with Sammy Basri, I think it is, and then Clayton Henry. So that, of course, is going to be interesting to us. Then there's a Future Suicide Squad 1 and 2. And if that book doesn't reveal that I'm married to Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn, I'm going to be upset and return it. No, I'm kidding. But the Suicide Squad stories are written by Robbie Thompson and Javi Fernandez, and a Black Adam story by Jeremy Adams and Fernando Passerin, who was also a Green Lantern artist once upon a time. And then the other, rounding out the other monthlies, which will be, one each month, so two issues again. Future State Aquaman by Brandon Thomas and Daniel Samper. And then Future State The Flash by Brandon Vieri and Dale Eaglesham. Future State Teen Titans by Tim Sheridan and Rafa Sandoval. Future State Shazam by Tim Sheridan and Eduardo Fonseca, and then Future State Swamp Thing by Ram V and Mike Perkins. So that's the lineup.
I just want to say thank you for handling all those pronunciations this time out, because that's something I've learned as a podcaster. I may have seen someone's name for decades, and then the first time I actually go to pronounce it out loud, I'm like, I don't know how to do this.
We should have had Steven on this podcast just to pronounce the names. Where's my Alfred when you need him? What is he doing?
You'd be surprised how many, I have to scour places like YouTube to find someone in authority actually saying the name. So
I'm going to text him and yell at him and see if he's making tea. It's unacceptable.
Tell him I want my muffin too.
Yeah. But all right. So obviously, look, on the network, we're probably going to cover. All right. So, Donnie, just to give listeners a kind of gauge, which ones are you planning to collect guaranteed? I can't talk. All those names mucked me up.
Did you sprain your tongue?
Probably, yeah. Which ones are you gonna for sure collect?
Definitely the Green Lantern books, the Flash books. I'm very interested in that Wonder Woman book.
Yeah.
Justice League, obviously, and I also plan to get all of the Endless Winter books, which is the lead up to that. Well, so
we're gonna be reviewing that as well.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
On the vidcast. That's for the vidcast. See, we're parsing out our content. We're giving you everything. We get a little bit of everything. I'm going to for sure be getting the Future State Justice League. Obviously, the Future State Batman. Hello. I mean, have you met me? I'm getting the Future State Superman stuff. I'm getting the Future State Green Lantern. And I'm guaranteed getting the Future State Flash. So between myself, Steven, and Donnie, we will be reviewing and discussing at least those ones we've mentioned. So you will be getting a healthy dose of our thoughts on Future State. But look, I'm excited for this in the sense that it looks like they've taken some ideas that were meant for 5G and put them here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a two-month thing. So if you really don't want to read any of these, take a two-month break. And then come back when everything starts up again. But I think this is a good move to try it on a temporary basis. See if any of these potential future stories hits a chord. You know, certain books hit a chord. And then if you want to incorporate it into the, you know, work the framework of that into the ongoing continuities, or at least set little seeds so that, you know, eventually you could build on those stories, then you have that opportunity to do so. I think that then to, you know, put all your cards in one basket.
Well, it's less of a risk with the way they're doing it now, because like you said, it's only going to be 2 months.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, with the new 52, it was a line-wide thing and it was intended to be relatively permanent. And then they had to eventually abandon that and change it up. So at least this way, like you said, less risk, but exciting, interesting stories. Interesting. I want to see the future of these characters. Who's around? Who's still around? Who's new to the fray? And let's see where things might go.
No, I totally agree. The thing is, when you have events like this, there's always something really something for everyone, whether you're a new reader or a veteran reader. And I think you can look at this, like you say, if things don't work out, eventually we always return to the status quo. But sometimes, and I know this as a Wally West fan and a Kyle Rayner fan, sometimes you get some really good content out of somebody new or a fresh take on an old character. So let's see where it goes.
And we're talking about wanting comics to survive. Right? And the way they survive is breathing new life into characters and stories. So, you know, they have to try these things at some point.
Yeah, I mean, it's a given that comics, they have different phases. They have to try things to bring in new readers. They can't simply rely on the people that are currently buying. Now, I don't mean that to be in any way insulting, but not only do they need to keep us, they need to bring in newer readers because, you know, as people go in and out of different phases of their lives, if they stop buying comics and you haven't made new readers, then that's how you die. And so we obviously want comics to continue. You know, 2019, according to Comic-Con, was actually a record-setting year. There's a lot of different options in comics right now.
But comics are dying. Yeah.
Oh.
Dying. But, you know?
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, there's, and again, there's a lot of, you know, Chicken Littles AT&T on the internet.
Doesn't care. That's why they've hired a new DC Comics editor.
But yeah, you know, I've heard about the imminent death of comic books since the mid 90s. When here we are in 2020, you know, in a pandemic year, and they're still around. So, but we do want to support the industry. That's one of the reasons we do these podcasts, is, you know, to express appreciation for this art form and hopefully gain some attention for it. And, you know, I'm happy to be a part of it. So definitely go out and buy some Future State and support DC, because they do need your support right now.
Absolutely. And again, as long as you're buying, whether you're doing it physically or digitally, just buy. That's the main thing. I don't want to single anybody out and say you're only a real reader if you're a physical reader. I think that kind of rhetoric is BS. If you're supporting the industry, you're supporting the industry. In as long as, you know, you got to do what's best for you. And what media, and I think, you know, we talked about bringing in new people. I think digital, you know, can bring in the younger crowd for sure. Right. So let's not put people in boxes and say, well, you're only a real fan if you actually collect and blah, 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 like physical copies. I think that's disingenuous to do. So however you consume comics, enjoy them and support the industry.
Like we always say, whatever gets you in the door, whether it's digital or physical, or, exactly, you know, you like variant covers or whatever, you know, straight paperbacks, whatever.
Get in the door and then lock yourself in there and stay there. And keep,
exactly.
Keep
yeah.
So with the news out of the way, what we're going to do is we decided to go through the origins of the main three Flash characters. So we're going to start with the first appearance of Jay Garrick, and then we're going to move our way to Wally West. And
Barry, then Wally.
Sorry, I said the other way around. It's Jay, then Barry, then Wally. I know who came when. Don't at me and start yelling there. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I can't say that. Don't at me.
Yeah. So there it is. That's what we're gonna do. We're gonna discuss their origin appearances and tell you what we thought of the initial run of each of our speedsters. So with that painfully placed pun out of the way, Donnie, what happened in our first story?
Well, we have Flash Comics number 1 from 1940, and that is the origin of Jay Garrick. And I looked online, there was a sale at one point of one of these copies of Flash Comics number 1 that went for $450,000. Chump change. So obviously, if you're talking about 1940, you know, you're talking about a comic book that there are probably very few in existence, and the ones that are probably aren't in very good condition. But that's where Jay Garrick's origin is. And the scene picks up at Midwestern University in the late 30s. And we see that a student is involved in a laboratory accident, and he inhales what is called hard water gas fumes. And he is put in a coma. And that student, of course, being Jay Garrick. So he eventually makes a recovery and he gets back on the school's football team. But, of course, he's affected by the fumes. Now, it's interesting to note here what I thought was a pretty savage insult. You know, his sweetheart, which is Joan Williams, she refers to him. She's like, oh, Jay, it's just you. You know, you're a scrub on the football team. And I'm like, man, that's rough. She's channeling 1930s Lois Lane, who, you know, used to give Clark Kent a hard time. So what did you think of the first few impressions of Jay there?
I thought he didn't seem very, adept at sports. he was very, I mean, seemed to be very clever in a science lab and in the classroom. But, you know, he seemed like an honest to goodness, you know, nice guy, hardworking, you know, salt of the earth kind of person. I was more taken aback by his love interest because, man, was she cruel. I mean, that woman is cold. Like, this is borderline Mr. Freeze cold. I'm talking like, I don't want you because you're useless, basically, because you're useless in the football field.
Yeah, that's a scrub,
that's,
you know.
That's the most shallow thing I've ever heard. That's
right. No, she don't want no scrubs.
Yeah, that's right.
How about that song? Yeah.
And all three listeners that were listening to this podcast have now checked out. whenever you and Steven start singing, the listenership goes down, which is why I don't sing, because then we'd just be talking to ourselves.
That's about as much as you're going to hear me sing, because, you know, my voice is, it's made for podcasting. It is not made for singing. So,
At least we know our strengths. But yeah, it was just a little, I was really shocked by how mean she was to him.
Well, and like I said, we see that kind of template for a lot of superhero girlfriends back from that era, where, you know, it's, you have kind of the meek guy who's hiding his superhero abilities, and he's enamored with some girl like a Lois Lane, or in this case, you know, Joan Williams, and they're not very nice to him. So you see a little immaturity from two different angles of, you know, the guy who doesn't project himself well, and at the same time, you know, a girl who may be a little mean-spirited and who doesn't, you know, have the greatest social skills when she's talking to, you know, a potential love interest. So it's interesting to see that dynamic worked out in the, you know, Golden Age comics. So
one of the things that I find very difficult to sort of reconcile with the Jay Garrick iteration of the character is the whole hard water kind of reasoning.
Yeah, you know, I'm not
Is it me or, again, just sorry to interrupt, but
no, go ahead.
I'm no scientist, so I may be way off base here. But hard water, fumes, particles, what have you, would not cause that, correct? I mean,
yeah,
When
we rate this, when we get to the end of this issue and we rate that, that's going to be my main criticism is, you know, hard water gas fumes, there are chemicals in hard water, and, you know, I think it varies, but nothing that would cause any kind of, you know, dramatic physiological alteration to make you into a speedster. So
I mean, that kind of logic is right up there with, why don't we just, you know, inject bleach or sunlight or drink bleach? It'll cure, you know, certain things. It's right up there. I mean, that is a little bit more ridiculous, but it's, you know, it's along the same scientific line of thinking. But again, you know, with these kind of stories, I think this origin story is the one that asks you to suspend. Keep in mind, we have characters like Superman, right? The Green Lantern are out in the public sphere. I think Jay Garrick's is the one that requires me to suspend the most disbelief.
Yeah, that's a fair point. You know, not that this was, I did like this issue.
But
I will say that, you know, looking at the accident that gives him his powers, that did fall a little flat.
Right. What did you make of his, I love how, I mean, there's a parallel, and we'll get into it later, but there's, when we see Jay's, you know, powers manifest, and he's chasing after, is it Joan? Is it Joan? What is it? I can't remember.
Yes, her name is Joan Williams.
Yeah. When he's chasing after Jones, like he the first time he's using his powers is to chase after a girl, right? And Barry, well, the first technically, he's using his powers to catch a taxi, or unwittingly to catch a taxi, but he does a similar thing to kind of catch up to Iris later on, you know, when it comes to his origin story. So I kind of dug the parallels there. But more importantly, what did you like? And again, I think it's the nature of the era that it was written, but there didn't seem to be much like, oh my God, what the heck is happening to me? From Jay. It was just, oh, cool. I can apparently run fast.
Yeah, you know, he doesn't spend a lot of time, you know, dissecting what's happened to him. He's just like, oh, you know, I have this speed now. And, you know, it was to tell a particular type of story. You know, they wanted to keep the narrative moving. They didn't want to slow it down, especially for, you know, younger readers. They wanted to keep it going. And again, they only had so many pages to tell a story. So, yes, they omitted that. But that's the kind of thing that, you know, they go back and cover in annuals and, you know, zero issues and that kind of thing. But, yeah, you don't see a lot of that in this issue.
Yeah. I did like, it seems like a lot of these early origin stories for these characters deal with some sort of mob hit, mob, you know, some thievery, but the mob is always at the center of these early stories. Of course, because again, the era that we're talking about, you know, mob violence was a thing, right? And
yes.
But it's kind of, I did like how they, you know, even in this, at this early stage, how they, from a visual standpoint, displayed his speed.
Yes.
I thought even for back then, it was drawn really well. And, you know, he was kind of like, in the way the mobsters sort of reacted to him, almost like a ghost because they couldn't see him.
Because they couldn't see him, right, yeah.
Appear and disappear. So I really did like that. What are some of your thoughts on that?
Likewise, I like the visuals a lot. You know, they didn't have anything to draw on back then as far as, or they didn't have a lot of, you know, comics, obviously, at that point to draw on. So, you know, they were making it up as they went along. But I will say, yeah, I did like the visuals there. You know, I like the kind of, you know, classic look of Jay's costume, as well as, you know, you just mentioned the villains, and that is the Faultless Four, led by Sir Satan. And I'm going to guess that's a bad guy's name right there.
Well, I mean, it's pretty obvious. I mean,
yeah. But I like their design. You know, they had that, you know, kind of, you know, classic villainous look, you know, and you almost, you know, hear that kind of, you know, mobster voice or whatever. You know, they were, you know, they, yeah, see, we're going to take you down a peg or two, see?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Like, I don't know. This issue felt very, I got a lot of Dick Tracy vibes with this.
Good point, yes.
Which is not a bad thing, because Dick Tracy's kind of cool. Yeah. But, and this is, now, in recent years, more obvious, but you know, the explanation for the winged helmet, the, you know, and its ties to Mercury, right? Which, right?
Yes.
The god of speed, or what have you.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's painfully obvious, or not painfully, but it's obviously pointed out. And I've seen a lot of people in the past make fun of Jay's look, but I think it looks pretty cool.
No, I like it. I mean, you know, it's hard because the Flash, you know, Barry's costume and Wally's costume when he was the Flash too, those are both very iconic. And so doesn't look as good, but when you see it in the original backdrop, it looks very stunning. So I don't agree that it's not a good design. It may not quite have the pop of the classic Flash costume that, you know, the Silver Age with Barry Allen, but it still looks really good.
Yeah.
So
I concur. I agree. It like I said, I was really taken away by the art. I'm always amazed. I mean, look, the art today is just phenomenal, right? There's no denying the leaps and bounds the comic art industry has taken.
Sure. Well, but, that's because, you know, we have artists now who have grown up generation upon generation standing on, you know, the giants who built, you know, Timely Comics and DC Comics and things like that. So,
yeah, and I mean, the paper that they use is better, the techniques they use. But there's something I've noticed it with Green Lantern, you know, the classic Green Lantern stories that we've read. And now with this one, I'm a sucker for that old school looking art.
There's something very satisfying about going back and reading something like this. It is really like being transported back to that time period. You know, even obviously, you know, neither one of us was alive back then, but you know, trying to imagine yourself on, let's say, a New York City street corner, buying this from a newsstand and sitting down, you know, on, you know, a park bench and reading one of these and eating some ice cream in the middle of summer. You know, how rewarding would that have been?
Oh, it would have been amazing. And also, you know, I just want to point out, if I did have a time machine or a cosmic treadmill, I'd go back in time and buy some of these key issues for like 20 cents, 50 cents, and then bring them back. It probably screw up the timeline, but
you couldn't do any worse than Barry does.
Exactly. What I got to lose. Well, the obvious thing is maybe George Clooney made four more Batman movies, but and the nipples began protruding even more. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Oh no, don't need that image.
but yeah, I mean, I want to say I enjoyed it. It was to the point. It's fittingly a quick read, and I think it's got that. It's rooted in a classic sort of mobster story, but with that fantastical element of super speed added in. And there's something about mixing that sci-fi element with such a grounded, down-to-earth scenario.
Yes.
The juxtaposition is strong. So overall, I like the issue. The origin is a little hard to swallow, but it is what it is. That's my overall take.
Well, let me just, you know, tie up the narrative here. What we see is that Joan's father, Major Williams, is actually kidnapped by the Faultless Four. Yeah. And they're looking for a secret to a new scientific advancement called the Atomic Bombarder. And the Flash, you know, he rescues them. They're actually, I don't know. I think they mentioned themselves being spies. They look like, you know, mobsters. But, you know, your basic, you know, template for bad guys back then.
Yeah, spies, and, monsters.
You know, Sir Satan tries to get away from the Flash by sacrificing all of the rest of the Faultless Four, you know, proving himself to, you know, living up to his namesake. But he eventually loses control of his car and plummets down to his doom as Flash is chasing after him. So it's, you know, again, it's a very straightforward type of story. Mm-hmm. It, you know, it moves quickly. But that was the style back in the golden age.
Yeah. So. I agreed. And like I said, overall, entertaining and fun. And I could see why people were enamored with this initial version of the character. So if you had to rate it, what would you?
You know, obviously the good far outweighs the negative. But I'd have to knock it down to about an 8 because of that hard water element in the story.
Yeah, I'll go 7.5. It was good, but that origin really takes some doing to go with. And you know, there are other older stories that that we've read that I've liked slightly better. So with that in mind, it's a 7.5 for me. But still, a solid start by any metric. Let's say. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
So
and that series ran until 1949. And then eventually we get the cancellation there and it emerges as Flash, you know, the new Flash in 1956.
Yes.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit more about
it. Any other final thoughts on Jay's appearance before we move on to Barry's?
Again, I just think it lays a it lays the framework for why people would get into this character. Like there's a lot there that you can say, okay, I understand why he would, you know, start a series that would eventually go on to, you know, spawn other speedsters and such like that, and why it would have the legacy it does. Like you could definitely see why it worked and why it still works today, and why, you know, Jay has had a resurgence in other media. You know, and I think later stories and then writers that have taken up Jay have really built on him being the first and having a wisdom and a legacy. But you couldn't have any of that without the first go round, right? And so you have to have a good basis to sort of build on, a good foundation, right? You can't build a house on flimsy foundation. And so the foundation here was solid, and you can't help but pay respect and appreciate the forefather of the speedsters.
Yeah, and you mentioned how Jay's had a resurgence. John Wesley Shipp just portrays him with such dignity on the Flash show. I just love that version of the character, to see him, you know, brought into a modern setting.
Yeah, it's. And hopefully we will get to a place where we're covering more of those modern adventures. We will when we talk about the Flash TV series, but in terms of comics, we are, because there's a presence of both a Flash and a Green Lantern in the JSA, Donnie and I are really going to do a bit of JSA coverage. On our two relevant, you know, related podcasts, so maybe we'll do a combined podcast for those episodes.
Sounds good to me.
Where it's a kind of melding of the two podcasts for the purpose of covering JSA books, but we will get to those more modern interpretations of Jay at a later date. But this one, again, good start, good foundation, and. If I was, you know, a reader back then picking these up, I would continue reading the character.
Oh, most definitely. Like I said, I mean, to see this kind of play out, and like you said, the what was built upon it with, you know, with Barry and with Wally, to see that the very foundations of that developing before your eyes, you know, again, it's like time travel. It's like, you know, we talked about, you know, using the cosmic treadmill. You know, it just transports you, and that's an amazing experience. That's why you read comics, is to have those type of experiences.
Yeah, so. Couldn't have said it better myself.
And that's why you brought me on this podcast.
That's right, exactly. Yeah. you had a great podcasting voice.
Well, thank you very much, sir.
Had you let off with the singing, we may not be having this conversation.
I definitely wouldn't have led off with the singing, let me tell you.
Like if you were doing an episode of your YouTube review, by the way, Donnie has his own YouTube channel now where he reviews these fantastic figures expertly. But if I had I seen your initial first review and you were singing your review, I mean.
Yeah, you basically have to get me to work all night, a bunch of overtime, which is what I did.
And chances are there would be no Flash or Green Lantern podcast.
Yeah, like I said, you know, I don't, I won't quit my day job, or in my case, my night job. But anyway,
yeah.
Let's flash forward, no pun intended, or maybe pun intended, hey, to 1956, and that is showcase number 4, which is the first appearance of Barry Allen. And also Turtle Man, and also Adam's favorite character, Iris West. I'm just kidding.
No, I do not hate Iris West. I just want to make it. I'm getting accused of a lot of things today, you know, which none of them are true. They're all They're all fake news. but you know, there's two things I'm not. Contrary to some nut job on Twitter, I am not homophobic. My friend, you know, former co-host, and he's not a former co-host because I fired him or anything. He's just very busy and needs to do other things. But Ryan Hulsman, my good friend, will attest that I'm not homophobic. Otherwise, I wouldn't have congratulated him on his engagement and been so happy that he's happy. But, you know.
Obviously, I mean, I wouldn't be here if you were. Obviously, right. And, so, yeah.
You know, Don, you've said you have family members and friends that are part of the LGBTQ community. And, yeah. You know, again, you wouldn't have been talking to me if I was anything but welcoming to that community. But the other thing I am not is an Iris West hater. I just, one is admittedly worse than the other. I mean, being a homophobic is far worse than hating Iris West. However,
right. Yeah.
You know, in the grand scheme of things, I am neither. I like Iris West. I think when she's in reporter mode, she's great. Like last season, this past season of The Flash, I liked her a lot better because she was actually being a reporter and they were actually investing in that part of her character, as opposed to her suddenly being a borderline scientist, telling Barry where to go, who to save, what to do. You know, it's all about the writing. And when she's written great, she could be a great character. And when she's written poorly, she ends up being like Felicity Smoke on Arrow. Now that's a character you can accuse me of hating because I can't stand that character.
Well, let's keep it on the Flash here.
Yeah.
So let's we saw Felicity for another day.
Yeah.
But
never. But yeah. Anyway.
So showcase number four, we start with a story called Mystery of the Human Thunderbolt, and that introduces us to Barry Allen, a police scientist who is doused with chemicals that have been simultaneously struck by lightning, and of course this eventually leads to Barry having super speed. But what's interesting that we see is that in his world, initially, he's actually reading the Flash comics that include Jay Garrick, which I thought was just a stroke of brilliance.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how he takes his persona, his moniker, if you will, is by, you know, his admiration for his comic book hero. And that's just kind of a great moment, like I said, a stroke of brilliance to see that, you know, a comic book hero actually modeling himself after another comic book hero. So, yeah. So, and, you know, I have to say that is just amazing. That's Carmine Infantino. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. But, you know, like one of the panels, for instance, you see Barry's in a diner. And some food gets dropped in front of him, and it's like everything stops. And of course, we see that on the Flash TV shows, is time stopping around him because he's vibrating at such an enormous, such a quick speed. But you can see that in this one panel. There's, you know, French fries and dishes and a piece of pie in front of him. And, you know, he's saying to himself, everything is just hanging there. And so right away, you're seeing difficult concepts brought to you visually in just an expert way. So, what do you think?
First and foremost, I want to talk about what you mentioned about him reading a Jay Garrick comic.
Sure.
I love that sort of meta referencing, that, you know, comic within a comic type of thing. But also, that would kind of lay the seeds, right, for Earth 2 eventually in the multiverse.
Exactly. I mean, you would see those two eventually, you know, come to inhabit the same space. And, you know, we talked about, you know, the future comic book writers and artists building on what was there to use things in that way. You know, it's just amazing to see all this from an 80 years after the fact perspective. You know, we have 1940 to 2020 to have that perspective, to see how things have unfolded. you know, it's an honor to do that, to see all the people who've worked on things like that, and then to be on a podcast and talk about that. You know, again, I always feel a sense of reverence when I go back and read comics like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, to me, it was just like, and I knew that that was the case going into rereading this, but it was like, that's really cool that you know, eventually he would get to meet, interact, and get advice from the character that he read about.
Yeah, like, you know, and yeah, that's just a great moment. And obviously,
that would be like you becoming a Green Lantern, you know, or you know, like if Gantt comes down and says, you know, Donnie, here's a ring. Or, you know, if I met Bruce Wayne or Superman, right? Well, if I met Bruce Wayne, I'd ask him what he does to keep Alfred behaved, because I'm having a devil of a time with it. But anyway.
Well, I would use the ring to go back to 2019 and say, everybody stop eating bats, okay?
And start wearing a mask from now, just in case. In case nobody listens.
Yeah. So we see, you know, in his first mission as Flash, Barry goes after the villain known as Turtle Man, which made me think of Jingle All the Way when, you know, what's his name kept calling, you know, Turbo Man, Turtle Man.
Yes.
That was Myron. So anyway, so Turtle Man tries to rob a bank. However, Barry stops him by using his super speed, despite the fact that, you know, Turtle Man, you know, he's a plotter or whatever. And he, you know, that kind of disrupts Barry's speed. But ultimately, Barry captures him and turns him over to the police. We see a lot of stories back in, you know, the Golden and Silver Age. And, you know, pretty simply, they're self-contained with the bad guy being apprehended by the police or the superhero turning them over to the police. So
also, I just want to mention, you said about how the scene in the diner, that was expertly done on a recreator on the Flash.
Yes.
The television show, the modern Flash television show. I can't remember if that exact scene was recreated in the 90s series, but it was in the 2014 pilot. So, and very well done. But in terms of dealing with the Turtle Man as his first villain, I like the fact that, you know, the juxtaposition between, you know, the fastest man in the world versus the slowest man in the world, right?
Right.
That's great in and of itself. But also the cleverness with which Barry ultimately upends him, because he realizes that running after the boat is only propelling the boat forward, and that doesn't do him any good. So he creates a whirlwind around the boat and is able to apprehend him that way. So there's cleverness to the character, which is, I think, when you're dealing with the Flash, it's important to show his intelligence, given that his day job, which is a forensic scientist, right? So you want to key in on his intelligence whenever possible.
Yes. So, well, that's definitely a key, you know, a key aspect of the character. So,
and I love the fact that even back then, the costume came out of the ring.
Right. You know, I will say that when we get to the end of this issue, because there was a backup Barry story in this, something I definitely want to say about the ring. And yeah, you know, you see the costume come out of the ring. Something I want to say just overall about the evaluation of Barry's first appearance.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we should move on here to the backup story, and that's called The Man Who Broke the Time Barrier. Mm-hmm. And we see a villain called Mazden, or I'm not sure if you'd classify him as a villain, but nonetheless, he's a man from the 50th century, and he stages a series of crimes, and he interacts with Barry, and eventually we see, you know, he interacts with the Flash, and eventually the Flash ends up taking him back to, I definitely say, you know, you'd have to call him a villain here. Anyway, Barry takes him back to the 50th century at the very end, which I thought was an interesting visual. I was like, okay, so that guy is moving at super speed. I'm not exactly sure how his body is holding together, but being that he's from that far in the future, maybe his clothes are holding him together. And of course, the Flash is able to, you know, come back to his own time and just kind of resume his, you know, civilian life. But that was an interesting, you know, take on the character where you have Barry, you know, time travel is something that is very prevalent in the Flash.
Yep.
You know, kind of, you know, perpetually. So to see a villain from the future, a time traveler, right away in Barry's first issue, you know, I thought was very fitting. So
yeah, for it to happen that early. I had always thought it was a newer conception, but evidently not. Right? It's right. been around from the beginning. Well,
right.
From Barry's beginnings anyway.
Right.
Yeah. And we all know what happens when he time travels in the comics. Since then, you know, an entire, you know, Flashpoint and all kinds of craziness. So, it's a pretty important piece of the Flash legacy, that's for sure.
Yes, and there's, you know, obviously this is a very expensive comic too, but there it's been reprinted in numerous, collected editions.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, the greatest Flash stories ever told. There's the Essential Showcase. There's, you know, DC Comics presents The Flash Volume 2, number 1. So, you know, it's out there for, you know, $15, $20 if you want to get your hands on this and actually read it for yourself.
Have they done a facsimile edition yet?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not sure. I don't think so.
Okay.
Boy, that would be fun to have.
Yeah, yeah. Because I have the Green Lantern one, and now I feel like I have to get the Flash one. So, DC, get on that.
Yeah. So, you know, what I was going to say earlier, you know, having read, you know, been reading comics for 40 years now, having read, you know, pretty much all of the origins of the legendary characters, both, you know, Marvel and DC. When I look at, like, the other mainstay Justice Leaguers, there's more, I think, from this first issue that has sustained itself into the modern Barry Allen than there might be with any of the other characters, because any of the other, like, main Justice Leaguers, because, you know, Superman, originally, he didn't have a lot of his powers, and his personality in the 30s, he was kind of a hothead. You know, Bruce Wayne initially, you know, Batman, he looked very different. He had, you know, kind of pinkish, purplish gloves, and he didn't mind using guns early on.
I call him the Undertaker gloves.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, you know, the characters have morphed and evolved, and that's not a bad thing. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, but with Barry, you read this, and despite the fact that it's 1956, it's almost like he's lifted right off the TV show. I mean, it's very similar.
You know what?
I really appreciate that.
That's a good point. It didn't feel like I was when I was reading it. It didn't feel like I was reading an older comic.
Right. You know, we talked on the Green Lantern podcast, and that is the Emerald Echo, available on iTunes and Podbean.
I love how he works. He can work in a shameless plug anywhere.
Shameless plug. There we go. But, you know, we talk about, you know, Hal Jordan and the Yellow Impurity, which is something that is sometimes referenced, but it's not a mainstay of the Green Lantern character anymore. You don't see things like that here that are, you know, obviously dated and kind of, you know, removed from the character. It's very much the Barry Allen that you know is in this comic, in Showcase number 4.
Yeah. Absolutely agreed, yeah.
And so, you know, in my estimation, I'd say that this is a perfect 10. I mean, an issue like this, it doesn't get much better to go back and to see it unfold for the first time with all the trappings from 1956. It's just such an enjoyable experience. So, yeah, find your way out, you know, whether you do digital, like we said earlier, or, you know, you want to do a trade paperback or a hardcover. Lots of ways to see this. So go ahead and pick up a copy and read it.
There's no excuse not to read this one because there's literally many avenues which you can get it. And I believe if you just want to get the one single issue digitally, I think it's $1.99, I think. on Comixology. But for me, I'm going to echo your 10 because it's truly a timeless tale where a lot of what you read in modern day Flash and what you see in other media regarding the Flash is intact here.
Exactly. So,
10 out of 10 for me.
Yeah. So, of course, we know that in 1985, something big happens with Barry. And, you know, we've talked about this, you know, before. And that is Crisis of Infinite Earths. And, of course, Barry Allen dies.
Spoilers.
I would hope that you have read that by now.
If you don't know that Barry Allen dies in the Crisis of Time.
Yes.
I can't help you at this point.
I mean, obviously, I mean, you know, that was at least partially adapted on, you know, the Arrowverse crossover.
Yeah.
You know, it happened a little differently. But in the main DC continuity, we do see Barry Allen sacrifice himself. And he's gone for, what was it, 25 years, 1985 to, was it either 2009 or 2010 was Flash the Rebirth?
Yeah. One of those 2 years. Yeah. I can't remember which one, but yeah. 25 years for sure, yeah.
So in 1987, though, we get a new Flash series, and that follows the former Kid Flash, and that's Wally West. And, you know, you and I were talking about this, you know, both on the last podcast and, you know, just with one another on the call, how cool this series was. And, you know, again, both of us being fans of that era of comics and, you know, seeing Wally eventually team up with Kyle Rayner. It's really amazing to go back and see this too, you know, to go back and to have access to three different starting points of narrative. It's just, it's very rewarding to do that. So,
And I mean, the fact that they're all dealing with a speedster, but each one is so uniquely different to the other. It's amazing. It's a testament to the mythology. I think.
Yeah. And that's, you know, paid dividends because, you know, and it's like we talked about with Future State, different eras and different characters appeal to different people. And some people like them all, and there's nothing wrong with that too. But, you know, someone may have been introduced to, you know, Barry Allen from the old Flash TV show in 1990, or they may have been introduced to Wally through the Justice League cartoon, and they form a bond there, and that makes them a comic book reader. So, like we said, whatever gets you in the door, you know, whatever character you like, you know, we think that that's a good thing. You know, even if we don't always agree on which characters are better or so on and so forth, whatever gets you here into this comic book world and whatever ignites your imagination, you know, we're completely okay with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Love what you love, as long as it's, you know.
Yeah.
As long as you're supporting the comic industry, it's great.
Yeah, and so, you know, this, you know, Flash number one, 1987, and at this point, so it would have been, so what would that, would have been about, what, 2 years? 1985 to 19, okay, so yeah, about yeah, two years. Okay. Yeah. 2 years.
You're telling me to do math too, geez. I had to say all those names and not math? No.
Well, you asked me to do math at the top of this podcast. You're like, what was that, six titles? And I'm like, I don't know. I've been up for like 20 hours now. I don't know. it's somewhere between 1 and 100. How about that? But it, you know, we open with this great panel where the Teen Titans are throwing a surprise party for Wally. And, you know, you see Beast Boy and Donna Troy and Starfire and Cyborg. So a lot of, you know, familiar faces there.
Yeah.
And this is actually Wally's 20th birthday. And during this, he actually gets an emergency call, and he is tasked with delivering a heart for transplant for a writer named Eugenie Hedstrom. And he has to go from New York to Seattle. And so he convinces the doctors to give him health insurance in return for his help, which I thought was a very interesting story point.
That was a little jarring, I gotta admit. Because he was a little bit of a... How can I say this politely? He was very matter of fact. about, you know, getting health care and being paid. And it's like, wait a minute. That's not very
superhero-like, yeah.
Superhero-like or selfless, but he's got a point. I can understand his point.
Yeah, you know, obviously, you know, he's like, hey, you know, healthcare. I deserve healthcare, so.
This is after, by the way, this is after hours work. It's not, you know, he's not with the Titans. And you know, it's like overtime. I'm assuming that you got paid for the overtime you did last night.
Yeah, that's right. Make sure the kids get Christmas gifts.
Right. And you know, if Wally's going to go running, you know, across, you know, states and all that stuff, then I could see why he could be compensated. Now, I mean, conventional wisdom would be to go to Bruce Wayne and say, hey, can you foot the bill for this? I'm sure he'd oblige, but maybe he and Wally weren't on such good terms at that point.
Yeah.
So, are they still on good terms? I don't even know. But who is Batman on good terms with?
Well, yeah, exactly. You know,
maybe his son?
Yeah. Yeah, Spooky, he has some, you know, problems with, you know, social interactions.
So. Well, and if experience is anything to go by, dealing with an Alfred like mine, I can understand why. Anyway, we love you, Stephen. We're just pulling your leg.
We certainly do. By the way, I appreciate the messages that he sends me and stuff. He's a really funny guy. So, yeah, so back to the story. We see while Barry is passing through Wyoming on the way to make sure that Eugenie gets this heart transplant, he runs into Vandal Savage, who is throttling a private investigator. And man, does Vandal Savage look crazed in the way he's depicted in this. What did you think of that? I thought that was an interesting interaction between those two.
With Vandal Savage?
Yeah, when he was out in the, you know, out in the snow when, you know, when Wally runs past Vandal Savage and Vandal Savage looks up at him and I'm like, whoa, he looks.
You know what's funny about that is that not funny, just more interesting than funny, but I don't recall. I'll be honest, I didn't read Wally's Adventures from number one. So I can't say that I'm an expert from day one. So this was a new experience for me. This particular thing about, you know, his first appearance being intertwined with meeting Vandal Savage, and right off the hop they make him look like a menacing, threatening villain. Like, he's not a guy to be trifled with.
Yes.
He kind of has visually, like a Kraven look to him.
Yes.
You know, Kraven the Hunter.
Yeah. Yes. Well, and of course, what we see him do at the end, he definitely drives the point home that he is not one to be taken lightly.
And people had a problem with the fridge incident. I'd maintain that. What Vandal does is just as gruesome.
Yeah, if not more so. I mean, it's, wow. So what happens is, you know, eventually Wally returns to where his party was being thrown for him. He also learns that there's a lottery ticket that he had bought before the party and that he had just become a millionaire. Mm. But he also notices a present that he hadn't seen before, and opening it up, it is the heart that was transplanted into Eugenie, and now it is there just in all its gory glory, just sitting on the table. And
it was very disturbing. I gotta, and I think one of the things that I really gotta point out is apparently I'm a sucker for, like, not only am I a sucker for early 40s, late 30s, early 40s comic art, but I really love the mid to late 80s and early 90s art. I mean the detail, it's amazing. Like you said, you describe it as gruesome, and it truly is.
Yes. I mean, the heart is just there covered, you know, just on the table, you know, covered with blood.
Yeah, so and, a mangled body in a fridge or a ripped out heart in a box, which, I mean, yeah. Really, it's like...
So, yeah, DC wasn't...
Hold my beer.
Yeah, DC okay. wasn't as afraid to scare you back then, so...
No, yeah. And again, I think that scene is more meaningful in a sense because of the conversation that Wally and Eugene share, you know, in her hospital room, how, because she's a prolific science fiction writer.
Yeah.
And sort of the Flash is a verification of, you know, some of the stuff that she's written, like, you know, it's
and I also like too how, you know, he's talking to her, she's in this dire situation with a heart transplant, and he's like, can I have your chocolate, please?
his need,
yeah, position. Again, you know, yeah, I mean, and obviously, you know, Wally did need at the time of sustenance, but, you know, nonetheless, you see kind of his immaturity on display, and it's on display for a while. So
yeah.
This is a very interesting run. So,
yeah, no, but so, but I think because he stopped and had that conversation with her, made that reveal and what Vandal Savage had done all the more horrifying.
I would definitely agree with that. You do get invested in her. Because, you know, she's not just, you know, a kind of, you know, a faceless patient in a hospital. Yeah. You know, you see that, you know, Wally likes her. And when you see that happen to her at the end, you know, the whole point of the issue was Wally trying to save her with the heart transplant. And, you know, it ends up on the table at his, you know, at the party. So.
And you see the anger, like the visual, the visible anger on his face. Again, the detail of the art is just amazing. One thing that we didn't talk about that I was sort of taken aback by was that he willy-nilly announces that he's Wally, like to people.
Yeah, and doesn't one of the doctors says, you know, weren't you Kid Flash before? And no, now it's just the Flash. You know, that's what he.
Yeah, said. But the way that he presents himself, you know, as Wally West, and there's no. There doesn't seem to be much regard with certain people,
yes,
at least towards a secret identity kind of thing. That's a different dynamic than we're used to,
right?
Because typically these stories go to great pains to detail the secret identity and the importance of secret identity.
Right. I mean, we saw, you know, the last podcast when we talked about, you know, Green Lantern. Number 13, where you know, Wally and Hal have their first proper team up.
Yeah.
You know, is that, you know, the, one of the big story points is at the end, they each confide in one another. This is my secret identity. So.
Yeah. But here it's just like, hey, I'm Wally. By the way, I'm also the new Flash.
And I eat a lot.
Yeah. But I did.
I want health insurance.
Yeah. Indeed he does. But also, you know what I liked? As he was running cross country, the descriptions of the different locales that he was crossing.
That was
a nice touch.
Yeah, that was really cool. And towards the end, you know, he talks about, you know, eventually, you know, he tires out. You know, he doesn't have in the beginning the same capabilities as Barry had. You know, he mentions only being able to run, what, you know, 705 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And eventually he gets tired towards the end. And but of course he has to keep going because he's trying to get the heart transplant to you know, Eugenie. And yeah, it's just a very interesting, there's a lot of little interesting details that's why we've chosen to focus on that as part of this podcast ongoing, is, you know, this volume of the Flash you know, cover Wally. So
we're going to do like we do with Green Lantern. Eventually we'll cover Barry, of course, as well in more detail. But I think certain things coalesced nicely where, you know, you took over the co-hosting duties of this podcast as we were starting on Kyle with our Emerald Echo. So,
which is available on Podbean and iTunes.
Right. Yeah. If we were hockey players, that'd be a hell of an assist by me there, I think. because you came on here at a time where we were covering Kyle on the other podcast, it was kind of a nice coincidence. Why not start with Wally? And then, eventually we'll double back and cover Barry. And we'll do more Jay Adventures, specifically as it relates to JSA. So we're going to get to all of them eventually. But
most definitely, yeah.
We're just choosing to start with Wally. Maybe post-future state, he'll have a more permanent place in the Flash comics again.
Yes. We're trying to find our own niche too. You know, there are other, Flash podcasts and Green Lantern podcasts, and we want to give you something different. You know, we're always thinking about our listeners.
Yeah, and again, it's not like we're not gonna go back. It's not like we're not gonna go back and cover Barry. Of course we will. I mean, I'm looking forward to do the Geoff Johns run on Barry and
most definitely. Yes, that was amazing.
And based on some of the. Based on just the origin issue I read for Barry, I want to cover some of his follow-up adventures from that and see some of his seminal moments too. So it's all going to happen. We've got a lot of content for you. So we'll never run out of that. But we're just starting with the eras that sort of made us fans of these characters. And then we'll branch out and go back or forward or what have you. And we'll go from there. But yeah, overall, is there anything else that we didn't touch on that you want to key in on? Or
no, we know we need to rate it. What was your rating for this?
I'm going to go ahead and say a 9.
You know, that was my exact rating too, was a 9.
Well, great minds think alike, that's what they say. Anyway,
I mean, there were a couple, maybe slow instances where, maybe there was a couple beats missed, but not very much. I mean, this was a masterful starting point for Wally's run as Flash. So, I think
because it hits with a really emotional story. I mean, it's light on. Let's be honest, it's light on action. But the human aspect of the story.
Well, it's not necessarily light on action. It's light on fighting. I mean, there's a lot of running.
Yeah. You're right. It's light on superhero versus supervillain action. There.
Right.
But it hits on an emotional level. And it's a very human story about, him using these immense powers to deliver a heart to somebody that needs a transplant. I mean,
right. And we mentioned that with the last podcast with Kyle that, superheroes, it's not always about beating the bad guy. Sometimes it's about trying to do the right thing,
Yeah. And the other thing I liked was, again, you hear him talk about it, the struggle of, living up to Barry and the example Barry sets, but also being his own version of the Flash.
So yeah, you see him as he's running across, the various states. So
that's going to be different. Whereas, when you read Barry for the first time, he's not aware that he has to live up to what Jay said, because at that point in time, to his knowledge, Jay was a fictional character.
Yes, at the very beginning with Barry, that's true. Yes. Yeah.
So it's a different dynamic right off the hop. So, but yeah, I loved it. I think, it was a little jarring seeing him, demand for health insurance and getting paid, but
it was definitely different. So,
yeah.
So with the three issues, we got an 8 and a 10 and a 9.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a C3PO.
Yeah, we're
R2D2.
We're covering all the bases from the alphabet to the numerical spectrum. Yeah, it's no, but this was again, it's a fun to look back on where these characters started, and now it's going to be fun to examine where they're going to go and where they have yet to have gone. So a lot of things to look forward to, and we have many more journeys ahead of us in the Speed Force.
Yes. So. We will be covering both the comics and the TV series, and I just can't wait. I am very happy to be here on the Multiverse.
And eventually the movie, too.
Yes. Know, so. Oh, yes. Yes.
Assuming that, you know, whenever we get to see that. But yeah, it's good. And like I promised, this didn't take as long as the last time we had a Flash episode up. So,
sure.
Or the last interval between Flash episodes. So.
That's the Multiverse Musings Podcast Network. See, I'm cutting a promo now. So
yeah, you know. You're always cutting promos. You're like, like the Ric Flair of podcasting. You just, anywhere you can, you cut a promo. Yeah, so if people, in the meantime, before our next episode of either this podcast or Emerald Echo or Ghostbusters or whichever one we have upcoming next, if people want to get in touch with you, where can they do that, sir?
You will find me muffinless on Twitter as the Emerald Enthusiast, as well as check out my new YouTube channel. I only have a few videos up, but I'm working on new ones where I review Green Lantern and other product reviews, comics, busts, action figures. No muffins, because I have none right now, but maybe Alfred will get me a couple in the meantime.
And you should, you know what? I wouldn't blame you if you reviewed an Alfred figure and said how poor it was, and that would serve that would serve him right for the lack of muffin. But yeah, we'll look forward I personally look forward to more of those product reviews, and of course. I encourage people to follow you and talk comics with you because it's always a fun time, as people can hear from our recording here.
Yes.
If you guys want to follow me, it's at @Adam_DeeseFan on Twitter. If Facebook, for whatever reason, is more your cup of tea, again, where's Alfred when you need him? Then go to the Multiverse Musings Podcast Network group on Facebook. Request permission to join the group. I will add you, and then we'll happily talk comics or superheroes in general with you. But that's all for this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope it maybe, if you haven't read a particular version of one of the Flash's origin, or you haven't read any of these issues, hopefully we've convinced you and inspired you to maybe check one of them out, if not all three of them. But either way, we hope you enjoyed it, and we will be back soon. But until next time, we want to remind you to keep your calorie intake up so you can run at full speeds and tackle whatever you have to do throughout the days at full speed, much like the Flash does. But also want to remind you that the Flash is forever, all three of them that we've covered today, from their first run to their last. So long, everybody.
I'm going to have to start unplugging my microphone at the end of these.
So long, everybody.
So long, everybody.